Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Text 39, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of ISKCON. Translation: then He created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all His mouth, since He could see all the past, present, and future. Purport: there are histories of particular countries and nations and of the world, but the Puranas are the histories of the universe, not only in one millennium, but in many kalpas. Brahma has knowledge of those historical facts, and therefore all the Puranas are histories. As originally composed by Brahma, they are part of the Vedas and are called the fifth Veda. This is the continuing description of Lord Brahma's creation of everything in the universe. The important things. Everything means to list everything would take many books itself, but in general categories, the important things are being mentioned. So the Vedas are important. Here is mentioned the fifth Veda, the Itihasas, and the Puranas. Itihas means Ramayana and Mahabharata. Of course, they are known to be authored by Valmiki and Vedvyas, respectively. But actually, they were already there. They were written down by Valmiki and Vedvyas. But they're already there. It means that the knowledge of the history was already there, even from the beginning of the universe. Just like we see in this Dasham Skand of the Bhagavatam, that Narad Muni at one point comes to Krishna and tells the whole of Krishna Leela what will happen in future. He already knows what's going to happen. In Trikala, you can see past, present, and future. So Valmiki wrote down the Ramayana, but it was already there, at least in the subtle form, within the mind of Brahma. And therefore we understand that Brahma actually has created all these things. Just like I was saying, the Vedas, some Vedas are said to be spoken, or some parts of the Vedas are said to be spoken by different rishis and so on, but the Vedas are eternal. So in this particular era, this particular kalpa, certain rishis may speak certain parts of the Vedas, but it doesn't mean that they originated that knowledge. Rather, they expressed that knowledge which may have appeared not to have been there, but which was. It's just that they manifested it. So Brahma, He is the creator with tremendous intelligence, tremendous responsibility, tremendous ability. He is creating the universe, everything within the universe. So we can just imagine what a great position Brahma has got. It's not easy to be Brahma. He has a very great position, very responsible position, in the service of the Lord. He's also a servant of Lord Vishnu. Even though he's got such a great position, he knows that his greatness comes from service to Vishnu. So he has a very great position, which is generally attained by performing many pious activities by a devotee. Lord Brahma is generally a devotee. At the least, he's not a demon. He's a demigod, so at least he'll be a transcendentalist, interested in it. If he's not a devotee, at least Lord Brahma will be interested in impersonal realization. Generally, he is a devotee, and he gets that position by dint of the position of Lord Brahma, by dint of very faithful devotional service over many lifetimes. with some desire for position and power and responsibility, but not in the demoniac way, that a demoniac person wants to dominate the universe for exploiting others. But a jiva who can take the post of Lord Brahma is one who wants to serve the Lord, but he has a particular desire to serve the Lord in a specific way, to have some big position in the universe. So, although Lord Brahma is a very great personality, there's no doubt, he's repeatedly mentioned throughout the Vedic literature because he has such an important role in the universe. But from the point of view of devotional service, or even more specifically from Krishna's point of view, Lord Brahma is not as important as a pure devotee who doesn't have a very big or important position within this universe. That is why this Prabodhananda Saraswati has made the sensational statement that vidhi mahendra adischa kitayate yat karunya kataksha vai bhagavatam tam gaurameva stumah. One who has got a little glance, the glance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's glance full of mercy has fallen on that person, then he considers Brahma and Indra like insignificant insects. It's quite a statement. Of course, it doesn't mean that he disrespects the demigods, but he thinks the post of Brahma and Indra is totally insignificant. Someone offers you, you may become Indra. Not in the slightest. What do I want to become Indra for? What do I want to become Brahma for? I'm already chanting Hare Krishna. So why do I need all these things for? Krishna himself puts this in perspective when addressing Uddhava. That natatame priyatama atma yonir na shankaraha nacha sankarshano na shriya naivatma chayata bhavan. O Uddhava, frankly speaking, you are so dear to me that even Natatame Priyatama, even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and my brother Balaram and my wife in the Vaikuntha planet, Lakshmi, and even my very self are not as dear to me as you. So of course, Uddhava, he's not exactly an ordinary person. Even from the worldly point of view, he's a exalted and respected minister of Krishna. He's an important person in the Yadu dynasty. But compared to Brahma, his position is very insignificant. In terms of the universal order, Brahma is the great creator of the whole cosmos, and Uddhava, from the worldly point of view, is a human being, highly placed human being, but he has a position as a minister of some dynasty on the earth planet. From the worldly point of view, he doesn't have a very big position, nothing compared to Brahma. Compared to others on the earth, it may be very important, but compared to Brahma, he has a very insignificant position. But Krishna says, I like you more than I like Brahma and Shiva and Balaram and Lakshmi and even myself. You're more dear to me than me. Even then, Atma Yoni, he addresses Lord Brahma, or he doesn't address, but he refers to Lord Brahma as Atma Yoni, one who is born from my very self. Now, of course, that is unusual, Brahma's birth. He's also called Padma Yoni. He was born from the lotus that grew from the navel of Lord Vishnu. But the choice of words of Krishna in this verse is significant. Atma Yoni. He could have called Brahma by so many, he has so many names. Kamalasana, Swayambhu, Chaturmukh. Brahma has so many names. But he chose the word Atma Yoni because it gives the indication that, you see, Brahma was born from me. We see that children are very dear to their mothers, especially.
probably more than their fathers generally. Now, why is that? Well, there may be various reasons for that. Mothers, women, especially the feminine nature, is supposed to be affectionate, although in the modern age, that is being diminished by propaganda. So women are generally affectionate, but why they may be so affectionate to their children? Because they're born from their very body. They carry the child within their womb. The child is part of them. They feel for the child because they literally feel the child. When the child is in the womb, they feel the kicking. So they feel the pains and pleasures of the child. They feel it to be part of them. So Krishna used this word, Atma Yoni, that Lord Brahma is born from my very being. But you, Deva, are more dear to me than he. Because, why is that? What is the reason? Because he has so much devotion for Krishna. In his quality of devotion for Krishna is more than that of Krishna states here, Brahma, etc. So Lord Brahma has such a great position, and he's also known as a great devotee. But the greatness of it's not to denigrate Lord Brahma, not to put him down, but to show the greatness of devotional service and how Krishna views the universe, that he's Krishna, we may be looking big, big position. This is Lord Brahma, this is Lord Shiva, this is Lord Indra. And Krishna says, here is my devotee. Patrang pushpang phalang tayang yome bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti upahritam ashnami prayatatmanaha. I very much like Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, and Krishna may accept that with great thankfulness, even more so than that is stated that the prayers of the Vedas, one of Krishna's names in Vishnu Sahasranam, Stava Priya, Krishna likes to be praised with the Vedic hymns. But he likes even more if the residents of Vrindavan, they offer him maybe even not prayers, maybe even chastisements, because it's full of love. That is why. We are also the famous story, Vidurani, the wife of she's a Shudrani, wife of one. Vidura is known as a Shudra by caste, which isn't considered very exalted or elevated. That's considered Papa Yoni, sinful birth. But she fed him banana, not even bananas, banana skins out of ecstasy. And Krishna, who had just rejected the gorgeous foodstuffs of Duryodhana, gladly ate the banana skins of Vidurani because it was offered with love and devotion. So this point is often made using Lord Brahma as an example. Brahma and Shiva, they're generally used as examples. And Lakshmi is also generally used as an example because they're all great devotees and they all have very high exalted positions and people pray to them for benediction, but they're often used as examples that even though they're great devotees, there are other devotees who don't have such very big positions, but their quality of love for Krishna is such that they get more mercy from Krishna. They're more favored by Krishna. Shukdev Goswami also was pointing this out in amazement that Mother Yashoda is tying up Krishna. Krishna ties up everyone. Everyone is tied up. Everyone is under the control of Krishna. But Krishna is tied up by Mother Yashoda. Krishna's name is Mukunda, Muktina, he who gives liberation. But he himself becomes tied up by Mother Yashoda. It's remarkable. Lord Brahma can't do that. Lord Brahma can't strut into Vrindavan and tie Krishna up. He can't do it, there's no question. He can't even begin to think of doing it, and even if he tried, he wouldn't be able to do it. So Shukdev Goswami commenting, Nemang varancho nabhavo nachasriya atma samshaya prasadam lebhire gopiya natvat prapya vimuktidat. He said that the mercy that Mother Yashoda received from Krishna in tying up he who gives liberation to others, Nashriya Rapyanga Samshaya, was not that was not given even to Brahma or to Shiva. Nimam Virinch, that's another name for Brahma. Virinchi, Navarincha, Nabhavo, Bhava, Lord Shiva. Na Shriya, Shri, Lakshmi. Anga Sangshaya, even though Shri Lakshmi is always associated, she's always on the chest of Lord Vishnu, but she didn't get as much mercy as Mother Yashoda. So these examples are often given to point devotees in the right direction, that what is our aim and object? What are we striving for? What are we doing here, chanting Hare Krishna? Often people ask, why are you chanting Hare Krishna? So there could be many answers to that. An esoteric answer would be that we want to tie up Krishna. That Krishna says, Pranayarasana, that I am the Lord, is he, no, the gopis, they say, that he is tied up by ropes of love. So ultimately that is the aim of the devotees. Not, someone may say, well, I want to get the position of Lord Brahma. Okay, if you chant Hare Krishna, you can. Someone may be coming for a blessing. Give me a blessing, I want a promotion. Now I'm the assistant supervisor in a factory and I want to get the position of chief supervisor. So what shall we say? Why be chief supervisor in a factory? You can be the chief supervisor of the whole universe. Chant Hare Krishna, you can get the position of Lord Brahma. But Vidhi Mahendradish Chakitayate. Devotees who are actually chanting Hare Krishna, if they're offered the post of chief supervisor or CEO of Tata Company or Prime Minister of India, or let's go up a little bit, quite a bit, the position of Lord Brahma, they think, what's the difference between that position and the position of a worm? They don't find it, they don't find any difference. They're not enamored by any such position. So, we should see what is our aim and object, what is our ambition. The devotee is also ambitious. What is his ambition? That, I nanda tanaja kinkaram, patitang maang vishame bhavam bhuto, kripaya tavapada pankaja, stita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. My dear Lord Krishna, I am now in this horrible position, fallen in this material world. Please place me, pick me up and place me in the dust, as an atom in the dust of your lotus feet. So that is the ambition of a devotee, to be the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna. So a devotee is not ambitious. Once Prabhupada told this to the parents of a devotee in America. Some parents came and said, you see my son, we brought him up, we wanted him to be a doctor and have a big job and all this, and now you see he's just sleeping on the floor and eating off the floor and all these things unheard of in American life at that time. So Prabhupada said, you see, a devotee has no ambition. A devotee is not ambitious. And then one of Prabhupada's disciples tried to explain that, you see, the devotee is not materially ambitious. Prabhupada said, no, we have no ambition. Even spiritually, we're not trying to be, you see, it's not that, you see, why Radharani is with Krishna? I should be with Krishna. I'll love Krishna more than Radharani. Why, you know, Nanda Maharaj? And what about me? I'm going to get my name in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Next time round, it won't be Nanda on your shoulder, it will be me on your shoulder. This is also one aspect of Mayavad, Prabhupada explained in the Nectar of Devotion. That instead of, a devotee doesn't think that I shall directly become the father or the mother of Krishna, but he thinks how to become the servant of the father and mother of Krishna. And to think that I shall have exactly, directly the post of the posts which are already taken up. It's another form of Mayavad. Mayavad means thinking I'll become God. So if we think I'll become Nanda Maharaj or Yashoda or Radharani. That's also another kind of Mayavad. So Prabhupada was explaining that a devotee has no ambition. Well, in one sense, he has a name. A devotee has a name to become Gopi Bhartur Pada Kamalaya Dasu Dasa Anudasa. To become the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, who is the Lord of the Gopis. So that is his aim and object. But he's not exactly ambitious in the manner of a materialistic person. Especially in the modern age, there's so much propaganda that you should be ambitious. Don't be a failure. Be a success. Make your mark. Be something special. Be extraordinary. You were telling me that now they have on TV this Hum Bharat Ki Beti. We should be flying fighter airplanes. And although I was saying, although in America they've been promoting this women's liberation, equal rights, we didn't hear when they were parachuting the Marines into Afghanistan, we didn't hear the women's rights groups protesting that why are you not sending any women into Afghanistan? Why are you not parachuting them in to fight, to try and find bin Laden and all? And that time they weren't protesting. It's a silly idea, actually. I mean, they say that by having women in equal positions, then everything will become more gentle and more compassionate. One army officer was, because they put women in the army too, because equal rights in America. So he was writing that this is so stupid. A gentle, more compassionate military. Well, the military is not supposed to be gentle or more compassionate. It's supposed to blast people's brains all over the floor. That's what the military is for. So the idea we should have a more gentle and compassionate military. That's why women aren't supposed to be soldiers. They're supposed to be mothers. Anyway, getting off the point now. I can't help coming back to that point. It's so stupid. You should have women jet fighter pilots and all that kind of just ridiculous. Anyway, what was the point? How did I get tangential off there? What were we talking about? Yeah, devotees shouldn't try and take the position of Ananda Maharaj. Then I went after that. Devotees are not ambitious. Yeah, so in the modern age they're trying to promote that everyone should be very, very ambitious. And everyone should be extraordinary and everyone should try to be something special. But actually, it's the very word extraordinary means that everybody can't be extraordinary. There has to be ordinary so they can be extraordinary. So everyone's trying to be extraordinary, but most people are ordinary. And then most people just end up being frustrated. That's one of the reasons why modern society is full of so much frustration. Because everyone's thinking, you see, I should be something special and very great, but someone's got to sweep the floor. It's a need in society that someone sweep the floor, someone cut the sabji. It's required. So everyone can't be extraordinary. And most people, by their karma, are going to be ordinary. And that's required also. Instead of just praising, you see, this very great person, big leader, this and that, big success, but you can't be a big success unless someone cut the sabji that you're eating. You've got to eat also. So many people are required to do all the different things in society. So, a devotee, knowing this, he's, even in devotional service, a devotee isn't ambitious. There are two ways a devotee could be ambitious in devotional service. One is a very materialistic kind of way, that one is thinking, you see, well, you know, why should I just be an ordinary devotee? I should be a town president and GBC and a guru and a sannyasi. So that's one kind of ambition, which is materially tinged, to say the least, more than tinged. Or one may be thinking that, you see, I'm just cleaning the floor here, but you know, I could be preaching all over the world, which is not a bad thought. But if it's done out of material motivation, then it's not good. Or another way a devotee can be ambitious is that, as Prabhupada said, a devotee's ambition should be to go back to Godhead. So he can be ambitious to become advanced in devotional service, but not in exactly the same way as this ambition, which is born of the mode of passion, to show that I'm very great or something very wonderful. But because, you see, that's always there, the desire to be, among the conditioned souls, the desire to show oneself better than others is always there, but that's especially exacerbated in the modern age, where everyone's pushed to be special, and so, you know, all the children in India, especially in most of Asia, the children are under so much pressure because the parents are all pushing their children to be the best, and only one can be the best. In a class of 30, only one's going to be number one. So the parents are pushing that my child should be number one, and they're putting so much pressure on the children, but it's just a reality of life that in a class of 30, 29 are not going to be number one. So 29 end up disappointed. This is inevitable. If we're pushing, you should be special, you should be something great, you should be something wonderful, then most people are going to end up frustrated and disappointed. So it's anyway not a very good policy for everyone to try and be something great and wonderful. And in devotional life, although it's good, definitely leaders are needed and preachers are needed, but if one has that ambition to be a big preacher and a big leader from an ambitious point of view, then actually, although he may do some kind of leadership for some time, he may be a big leader and a big preacher and big guru, but if the motivation is predominantly materialistic rather than that of how I can serve Krishna nicely, then he'll just end up making a big mess, that's all. Because he's posing as a spiritual leader, but actually his desire is mixed with a desire for name and fame and glory and honor, and therefore one cannot remain in the devotional line by bluffing others. He may pose as a great spiritual leader, but inside, what's happening, because he's doing it for the desire for material honor, simply his material desires within the heart are growing and growing and growing and growing and growing, and one day there's a big, it's like a boil. It grows and grows, and all the pus comes out, and you can see that actually this person, although externally posing as pure-hearted, is actually filthy-hearted, and it causes a big disaster, because people put their faith in such a person who is actually materially tinged. Or it may be just that someone's trying to serve Krishna, but and then they get a position, and then the latent desires within their heart grow that they didn't start off with so many material desires, but at some point they started cultivating those material desires, and as a result, they eventually became devoured by those desires. So we should be very careful, because especially in the modern age, with this everyone coming out, I have to be a success, we have to show ourselves, we have to do something. So it's not that when we come to devotional service we immediately become free of all material desires, as we may have noticed. Did anyone notice? I hope you noticed, because if we didn't notice, it's more of a problem. If we didn't notice, it's either that we don't have any material desires, which is very unlikely, or that we're so overwhelmed by our material desires that we can't even recognize them. Then we have more of a problem. At least if we recognize that we're full of material desires, and we can start to work on them. If we can't even recognize them, then we're really in problem. It's just like a mental patient. If someone is psychologically disturbed and he recognizes it, then you can begin to treat it. But if he doesn't even if he refuses to admit that he has some psychological disorder, it's extremely difficult to treat it. So in the same way. So we come to devotional service with some idea that we want to serve Krishna, we want to become purified, but at the same time, we have so many material desires, and they're often very subtle. And the fact that we've been conditioned from the beginning of our lives that we have to show ourselves and prove ourselves and make a big show and don't be anything ordinary, be a great success. That contamination, if that remains in the heart, then that can spoil our devotional life. Just on the side, one of our Keshav Bharati Prabhu. I don't think he's well known among the, not so well known among the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, because he's led a fairly, not very outgoing life for many years, but he's well known among the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. He's well known and well loved by his godbrothers. So he told that, you see, at one point he was a big leader in our movement, famous leader of our movement. So he told that his father, when he joined the Hare Krishna movement, his father had been very much against it. He hated it. He was disgusted. You see, my son, I trained him up to be a big man in this material world, and instead he's jumping around on the streets in some orange bedsheets with a shaved head, and it's just totally disgusting. How could my son, who I put so much hope in him, but then after some time, after quite a few years actually, Keshav Bharati Prabhu went home to visit his father, phoned him up, and his father was very pleased with him because he heard, oh, I heard you became a big shot in that Hare Krishna movement, because he was an international leader. So he was pleased, you see, that it's an international, after all, it's an international movement, and my son has become a big shot. So that's the way materialistic people think. But devotees shouldn't think like that. Now I've become a big shot. My aim is to become a big shot. And then you become just a punarmushika bhava. You may get a big position. And then, again, Krishna won't allow someone to be a big, big leader and a big, respected by others in his name unless they're actually doing it for his pleasure, for Krishna's pleasure. So then again, become a mouse. So that desire may be there subtly, that yes, I should prove myself, show myself to be a very great person. So, well, you may become Lord Brahma. That's who's under discussion in this verse. But actually, we don't want to become like Lord Brahma as much as we want to become like Uddhava. We want to become very dear to Krishna. Mother Yashoda, from the universal point of view, is totally insignificant. She is the wife of Nanda Maharaj, who among the Vrajavasis is an important person. But then who are the Vrajavasis? They're people living in the jungle, keeping cows, taking cows from one forest to another, bare feet. They're absolutely insignificant. To be the king of the cowherds is not a very high position in the universal order, the Nanda Maharaj. So Mother Yashoda is his wife. She's a cowherd village woman. You see, even now, in Gujarat, you have the cowherding caste. They're not considered very high class or very special. They're cowherd. No one gives them. Oh, cowherd. No one gives them. A cowherd. It's very ordinary, less than ordinary, not to speak of extraordinary, they're under ordinary. But Mother Yashoda, her position in the universe is, from the material point of view, it's absolutely insignificant. But from the spiritual point of view, she is so significant that she can tie up God. Much more significant than Lakshmi or Brahma or Shiva. Much more important. So devotees should remember this, that how or what should be our mentality. Actually, our mentality should be that we want to attain the status of Mother Yashoda, not that we want to take the position, but we want to have by her mercy and by all the devotees' mercy, we want to have that love for Krishna which comes about not by grabbing it. You can't just forcibly steal Krishna bhakti and put it in your pocket. But one can be blessed with it. Mercy comes down if one cultivates the mood of humble service without any personal ambition. That is the key. That is why when people come to that story that Prabhupada told, not exactly story, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was preaching in such a way, his lectures were so erudite, Hare Krishna. His lectures were so erudite that he attracted very big intellectual kind of people to come and join him. So in those days you see a university graduate, even now people think it's something special, but in those days to be a university graduate was something very, very special. In India, only a very small percentage of the population, actually in India, even up until recently, only a small percentage of the population could read and write. What to speak of being university graduates. So in those days, to be a university graduate was a very, very honorable position. But if even a university graduate came to join Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's movement, you'd first thing, clean the pots. Go and clean the pots. And second thing, clean the pots. Do it for some time. Let's see, what are you coming for? Are you sincere to serve? You should understand this point. You've come as the servant, not as the master. You may have your master of art degree, but here you are not the master. You've come to be trained to be the servant of who? Of Krishna, who is the master of Saraswati. Whatever learning you have, even these nonsense things you learn in the university, that the Vidya Devi, Saraswati, she is giving knowledge, but she is also a servant of Krishna. Maha Saraswati is in the spiritual world. And this Saraswati is in the material world, and the original Saraswati is in the spiritual world. She is giving knowledge. Or she is the goddess of knowledge, of learning, not of knowledge. She is the goddess of learning. There's a difference. So that is the formula that you may be have a master's degree, or you may have no degree, you may not be even able to read and write, but still we find that people tend to be very proud, with or without qualification. Some people may have some apparent reason to be proud, and some people have no reason to be proud, but generally everyone in this world is puffed up. So the first training in Krishna consciousness for everybody: clean the floor, wash the dishes, clean the toilet. That's even better if you really want to get purified fast, because in India people generally think clean the toilet, oh I can't, that's only for the lowest caste people. But when we come to Krishna consciousness, there's no caste, there's no consideration of caste, that this is a Brahmana Vaishnava and this is a Shudra Vaishnava and this is a, there's no such consideration of any such thing. Everyone comes to serve Krishna on the platform of the soul, and the soul is not a Brahmana or a Shudra or a Chandala. Soul is the servant of Krishna. And even we may say, well, this person is very educated, this person is uneducated. So, for practical purposes, we may engage differently, or we may treat differently, but actually we don't discriminate that this devotee is better than this devotee because he has a PhD. There is no such consideration. That you don't become a better devotee by having an academic award. It's not at all true. Rather, there's more danger of you becoming materially puffed up by having such things. It may be, it's it's more likely to be an obstruction in devotional service than an asset. Joro bidda joto mayar bhaibhav tomar bhajane badha mohajanamaya anitta sangsare jivke kareye gadha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was himself highly qualified, being from practically the first generation of British educated Indian, he wrote that this materialistic knowledge is just another exhibition of Maya, the illusory energy. And it is an obstacle in the worship of Krishna. It causes more illusion in this world of illusion and makes the jiva, who is supposed to be Satchidananda, my servant of Krishna, just into a big ass. Just as the ass carries big heavy loads that are of no benefit to him on his back. So people who are advanced in material education, they carry around big heavy loads of useless knowledge in their brain. Useless because it has no connection with understanding Krishna. So it's a useless, it's just a burden. Because we're supposed to fill our consciousness with thoughts of Krishna, but instead if we fill our thoughts with, I mean, there are so many materialistic subject matters, you can fill your, if you study anthropology, you might fill your head with thoughts of jungle dwellers in Borneo, or if you are studying astrophysics, you might fill your head with various complex mathematical calculations supposed to show how the so-called Big Bang took place. I mean, there's so many things you can fill your head with, but if it's not in relationship with Krishna, it's simply distorting our consciousness or giving us subject matter to think about other than Krishna, and is therefore an obstacle in the path of understanding Krishna. So therefore, one should not be enamored by these things, but rather if someone asks you, oh, somebody say, what is your qualification? And you may be highly qualified. You may have MBBS, for instance. And you may say, well, I'm sorry to tell you that unfortunately I wasted 7 years of my life and as a result I got this MBBS when I could have been studying Srimad Bhagavatam and washing the pots for Krishna. But instead I wasted my life doing this. So and people won't understand, what are you talking about? Gokul Chandra Prabhu was telling me that sometimes people ask him, he's preaching in South India, that, oh, what is your qualification? He says, well, actually I didn't go to university. And he says, oh, I'm sorry. He says, like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you. He says, what sorry? I'm not sorry, and why are you sorry? I'm not sorry I didn't go to university. I'm damn glad I didn't go. Devotee's way of thinking is different to that of the materialist. He's thinking that, I have to show myself to be a very great person, but actually the real aim is to be a great devotee. But even that, to be a great devotee, it doesn't mean that you have to, you see, I have to GBC, sannyasi, it's not required. You can be a great devotee by washing the pots, and maybe more so, because you're less likely to have that. You see, if you're a big sannyasi, I have so many disciples and I'm traveling all over the world and so many people depend on me. So you could also have a hunker of being a pot washer, but it's less likely. You could have, see, I'm washing the pot so nicely, but you're not likely to have so much feeling of false prestige. So to be a great devotee, what does it mean to be a great devotee? It doesn't mean that you have to have a big, big position or any position. It means to have the mood of service to Krishna. And Krishna can be served in any way. Krishna doesn't even need big sannyasis and big preachers. And Krishna can make the whole world Krishna conscious by himself. He's just, why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu given us? He could have himself made the whole world Krishna conscious, but he gave us an opportunity to serve him, that's all. Otherwise, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't need anything. It seems like that to us because it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, but actually, Krishna doesn't need our service, whatever it may be. We can cook 56 items for Krishna, but anyway, Krishna in the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda, Radharani are cooking so many things, we're much better than what we're cooking. So you may think, I cooked so nicely, but rather our mood should be that Krishna, so many millions and billions of devotees are offering you things to me, could you please be so kind as to accept this very insignificant offering? I know I don't know how to cook properly or anything, but anyway, please accept it. So that is the mood of a devotee. Not that the pride is absolutely the opposite of Krishna consciousness. So what our ambition to be a great devotee should be understood. You can be very ordinary from the external point of view. Someone may not even notice you. You may be just sweeping the floor for 30 years in the temple. But if no one notices you, very good. Then you're more lucky. As soon as someone notices you, see, sweeping the floor for 30 years, oh, then your problems begin. As soon as the recognition comes, the problems begin. This Madhavendra Puri, he was going to Puri to collect chandan for his beloved Gopal deity. And then the news, in a dream, Gopinath, the deity in Ramona, stole some kheer for him. So that news reached ahead to Puri. But when that happened in Ramona in the night, the pujari came and said, hey, look, here's the kheer that Gopinath kept for you. You're very lucky. The pujari also had a dream. He's also a great devotee because Krishna came in his dream and said, look, you didn't notice, but when you offered the bhog, the kheer, I stole some. I didn't give it all back to you. I'm supposed to give it back, but I didn't. I kept it for my devotee Madhavendra Puri. So you please, he's sitting in the marketplace, go and find him and give it to him. So the pujari came and calling out, where is that very fortunate person called Madhavendra Puri that Krishna has become a thief on his behalf? He didn't mind. I may be a thief. People will criticize. This Krishna, he's a thief. But my devotee is sitting there hungry and he wants some kheer. So here it is. You should. So who is that great personality? So he brought that kheer to him. Madhavendra Puri took it. And afterwards he thought, oh, now the pujari is going to tell everyone. And in the morning people are going to come and start praising me. I'm a great devotee. So, oh, all right, I'm leaving immediately. He left in the middle of the night and went on to Puri. But even there, the news of this great devotee, the news came ahead of him that he's a great devotee, that like this. But still he went to Puri. He didn't avoid because he had some service there. He had to get the chandan there. So Madhavendra Puri, he was trying to avoid the recognition. He didn't want that he would be recognized. But still, in the course of his service, he had to accept that. But that should be the attitude of a devotee, not that he's looking for recognition, or, see, I should be so wonderful, I should be so great. So, if one doesn't grossly fall down as a result of these materialistic desires, then he may get the post of Lord Brahma. Maybe. I mean, you have to, it's not an ordinary devotee. I mean, you really have to be something very special to get the post of Lord Brahma. But from the pure devotee's point of view, that is also a kind of contaminating thought, that I will get such a position. Rather, he'll think, oh, you got the post of Lord Brahma, well, never mind, better luck next time. Next time you could become a sweeper of the floor in Vrindavan. That will be more fortunate. So actually that's what Lord Brahma did. He saw Krishna is taking out the cowherd boys, and who is this? I'm the son of Narayana. And this Krishna, I thought he was Narayana, but I'm beginning to have my doubts. He's running around and just the son of a cowherd boy and running around barefoot in the cowherd pastures. I'm beginning to have my doubts about this fellow. So he stole the cows and calves, and the cowherd boys and the calves. And then Krishna, he showed him that, well, you are wrong. I am God. You're not so intelligent after all. I'm more intelligent than you. And then Brahma thought, oh, I made a big mistake. So he came again in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes as Haridas Thakur. Javan Haridas, sometimes they call him. Javan means Yavana, means absolutely rejected from respectable society. He took that position and simply, humbly chanting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would call him, come and take prasad. No, 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 I cannot. I'm very fallen. I'm very lowly. So he deliberately took that position of being born in a Muslim family so that he would have no material status. But nevertheless, he got ultimately the greatest status as being known as Nama Acharya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to preach the holy name, and he did it through Haridas Thakur. And he said that to Haridas, that there is no devotee like you in the whole world. You are the greatest devotee, even among so many great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave so much recognition to Haridas, not because of any material position, but because of his complete faith in the holy name and because of being the personification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Chunadapi sunichena tararapi sreshuna amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadahari. This Haridas Thakur is the personification of humility and absolute humility, always chanting the holy names, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. He was beaten in 21 or 22 marketplaces. He simply tolerated, and then he was always very respectful to other devotees, and he didn't want that others would respect him. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would call him, you eat with me, but he would never go sit there. You see, I'll sit next to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then he'll be considered, you see, a very great devotee because he's sitting with the personal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He would never take prasadam with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He kept himself always at a distance. Even when the devotees would come to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wouldn't come close. He would remain at a distance. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go to see him because Haridas thought, I'm too fallen to come even close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's the absolute personification of Mahaprabhu's teachings of humility in devotional service. So that he achieved. As Brahma, still, at least from the external point of view, it appears there was some ahankar, some sense that I am a very great personality, I am the overlord of the universe. So later he gave up that position, that I don't, let me not be Brahma, let me be known as a Muslim, out rejected from Hindu society, and serve the Lord from that position. So this is our lesson. Hare Krishna. We'll finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any question about this? Is there any question about this class, first of all? Can we continue this subject? Is there any question about this? Usually we ask questions related to the class. No question related to the class. Okay. Your question? Yeah. That what? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, just like people, they're in this Swaminarayan Sampradaya. So, they're already attached to that. Tasya tasya achalam shradham tameva vidadhami aham. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in relation to demigod worship, but it applies in this case also, that yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta shadhaya chita mitchati tasya achalang shadham tameva vidadhami aham. That whatever people put their faith into, because they have a desire like that, Krishna makes their faith very strong. Krishna is the super soul, Paramatma. So it would be a very difficult job to change their faith. But we can, for the sake of preaching, we can apparently sympathize with that and say, oh, you're a Swaminarayan follower. That's very nice. We don't think it's very nice, but we say like that. Of course, Swaminarayan or Sahajanand Swami, he also was a great devotee of Krishna and a great follower of Bhagavad Gita. So you please take this Bhagavad Gita as it is and give 100 rupees, whatever it costs, and then you can learn more about what Sahajanand Swami was teaching. That is a better way, generally, to introduce our teachings. Like that. So, Hare Krishna. We'll finish that. Yeah, Brahma's wife. Brahma has several wives. So, Saraswati is sometimes known as one of them. Gayatri, then Savitri. The wife of Vishnu. She's also known as the wife of Vishnu. Yes, and wife. I haven't seen that they're different according to the statements of Shastra. It would have to be one thing that's investigated. It may be also, you see, just like yesterday we were reading, was it yesterday? We were reading here about how it, the Shastra deals with different kalpas. So it may be that in different ages, one time Saraswati is his wife and one time's daughter, maybe different person by the same name. I don't know exactly. It's one of those things stated in Shastra, and there are many technical details which would have to be researched to try to